Now, TalkZone presents Our Global Hope, World-Changing Leadership Talk, featuring Dr. Henrik Mann, discussing higher standard leadership through a broad scope of issues in the worlds of business, politics, nonprofits, international development, environment, media, and religion. Here's your host for Our Global Hope, Dr. Henrik Mann.
Hello, listeners of Our Global Hope. Happy New Year and new decade of the 21st century. I'm so glad you're tuning in to listen to Our Global Hope today, this first day of January 2010. It's time for more world-changing leadership talk. We're here to explore our world through the lens of leadership, to give people a voice on what good leadership looks like from their local reality, and to explore the implications of a new triple bottom line definition of success, one that is focused on advancing the dignity of people, growing profits, and protecting the welfare of the planet. I'm Dr. Henrik Mann, president of Gencom International, a global management consultancy and brokerage. You can learn more about our show by looking us up on the World Wide Web at ourglobalhope.com or emailing me at hman@gencomintl.com. Since this is a pre-recorded show, we will not be taking live phone calls today. Last week on Our Global Hope, we had as our Christmas show a discussion of the implications of business leaders doing both well and good in their labor initiatives. This week we take stock of our first decade as we take a critical look at President Obama's Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech as a prism for understanding what's happened in the last decade, and also want to look ahead to forecast some themes of the new decade, which starts today. I've invited my part-time co-host, Dr. Charlie Self, to join me today on helping provide some additional perspective. He's always a great addition to our show. Charlie is an author, speaker, professor, and consultant presently working out of Springfield, Missouri. Happy New Year and welcome, Charlie.
Well, Happy New Year, Henrik, and Happy New Year to all of our listeners of Our Global Hope. It's exciting to start the year with intelligent discussion that'll make a difference in everyday life.
Well, Charlie, I want to set the stage for our listeners by identifying where we're going to go with this show today. First, we want to take a look at the speech President Obama gave by setting it within the context of Christian theology and the events of 9/11 and the history of America's involvement in war, and maybe even touch on the history of terrorism in general a little bit, because all those affect why he gave that speech. And then we want to take some time to look at the speech by evaluating if it reflects fairly on the movement of nonviolence and on just war theory. And finally, we want to declare your and my positions on 21st century leadership that is rooted in truth, love, hope, and nonviolence, and what we see looking ahead into the new decade to come. Sounds like a big challenge, but I think we're up to it.
I think we'll have a great time, and I think what you've also set out, Henrik, is really an agenda for all thoughtful people, not only who are listening to our show and other shows that may be out there, but thoughtful people that want to really see some of the promises made a decade ago actually begin to be fulfilled.
You know, I'd like to begin by reminding our listeners of historian Jeffrey Parrott's observation in his book, A Country Made by War, about the United States, where he comments on the time period from the American Revolution to the Vietnam War. And our listeners should remember that you're a historian, so that's why I'm wanting to start off with some observation, some context about history. And he wrote this. He said that since 1775, no nation has had as much experience of war as the United States. 9 major wars in 9 generations. And in between the wars have come other armed conflicts, such as the Philippine insurgency and clashes in the Persian Gulf. America's wars have been like rungs on a ladder by which it rose to greatness. No other country has triumphed so long, so consistently, or on such a vast scale through force of arms. Charlie, I'm wondering what you think about that quote and what it might mean from your point of view to consider an American president speaking on accepting a Nobel Peace Prize when he just a week previously had escalated the occupation in Afghanistan with tens of thousands of more troops.
Well, you know, I think the historian's observations are accurate in terms of the number of wars and number of conflicts. I think where there's where there are often significant differences is nature and meaning of those conflicts. I would say this, that the U.S. has experienced major conflict as denoted, but has also been a partner for peace. So I'd like, it's almost like you have two parallel tracks here in history. You have this amazing, track of conflict that he's denoted and that any honest citizen can see. But you also have an amazing context where the U.S. has been a broker or a negotiator or involved in really seeing peace happen.
Well, Charlie, when you think about kind of those two tracks of history, that America has both a an activity in war track record and an activity in building peace track record, what explains a country that has invested so much maybe on both sides of that equation? How can that be?
Well, part of it is we're a nation of many nations, and I think the fact that our own makeup of citizenry has evolved over 200 plus years, and the very nature by the values that we have, the principles that we cherish, yet combined with the economic and political self-interest that characterize any nation, we've sort of been an interesting, Theodore White called America a nation in search of herself, and he spoke about the kind of the two parts of our national character, and that's, I know it's a little bit general, but this altruistic, genuine belief in democracy and freedom and opportunity, which continues to characterize a lot of our nation, and the sense of welcoming people from all lands, and the other side of that is the sometimes militaristic self-interest, sometimes narrow-minded ethnocentricity, and then the geopolitical opportunities, responsibilities that come with empire. For America, that came later than other Western nations, but no less vigorously. So we really have these two parts kind of fighting each other at times, this real sense of an experiment in freedom for the whole world to watch and a geopolitical empire trying to sustain herself.
You know, Charlie, I can't help but think that perhaps some of the reason for that bifurcation of history of America's involvement is a result of having different themes of our identity, one being the idealism and the high-natured values that we believe would come from a high reading of Christian faith, which has been a strong theme in the identity of America. And then also the pragmatism, which has faced up to trying to build a country that's rugged, that has a lot of resources, and that geographically and historically has had a lot of influence around the world.
Well, you know, let me give you an example that's really tangible. If we go to the 19th century, my own family has Cherokee in its background. And you can kind of get a little vignette of America here with the combination of missionaries and influence of Western civilization. The Cherokee Nation of Georgia had a constitution, had a Bible, had laws, citizens, private property, things that we would just call, you know, normal, I guess, by Western standards. And at the same time, hungry white settlers didn't want a sovereign nation existing with, you know, so close to the frontier. And so Justice James Marshall ruled that it was a legal nation and that the U.S. was obligated to treat her as sovereign. And Andrew Jackson, the president, said, well, that's nice. Judge Marshall's made his decision. Now let him enforce it. And, of course, the rapacious settlers drove the Cherokees on the Trail of Tears to Oklahoma. And you can repaint that picture scores and scores of time. Settlers, missionaries, humanitarians, unbelievably altruistic people trying to defend the land and the traditions of the Native Americans, and land-hungry settlers and rapacious robber barons taking it over. So you've got this strange juxtaposition that's part of our history. You know, we didn't colonize a lot of territory overseas per se. We colonized the continent.
Good point, Charlie. You know, as I think about President Barack Obama's speech in Oslo, I was very impressed with one of the columnist journalists, John McConico, who wrote that if there was a Nobel Prize for theology, large parts of President Barack Obama's Oslo speech could be cut and pasted into an acceptance speech for it. The Peace Prize speech dealt with war, and he made a clear-cut case from the start for the use of force when necessary. And while it began with political arguments for his position, his rationale took an increasingly religious tone as the speech echoed faith leaders and theologians going back to the origins of Christianity. And I'm wondering, Charlie, as you think about the history of America, have there been a lot of people who've used Christian scripture and thought to justify involvement in war?
Oh, certainly. Again, we have a bifurcation or a kind of a contradiction. Let me give you a couple concrete examples. What is today Massachusetts had two radically different colonies in its territory. The original Pilgrims were nonviolent, nonconformists who lived for two generations at peace with the native populations. In contrast, the Puritans wanted to create a different kind of region, and they had many, many more conflicts and would justify displacement or war by virtue of their theology. You go down to Pennsylvania, founded by Quakers, who by definition are against the use of any military force, and they lived at peace for over a generation, actually almost two generations, with Native American populations. But when their influence waned, others found ways to justify. Now that's just Native American, that's just American soil and the colonization process. In all of our history, when it's time to go to war, all nations, not just America, all nations pull from their traditions and seek some kind of divine justification. Now I'll say that what Obama's speech gives evidence of is what we call the just war theory. St. Augustine in the 5th century gave the initial principles. St. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century refined it. And it is not a call to war. It's not a call to crusade. But the idea is, in certain times and in certain situations, military force is necessary. Others feel that the certain times and certain situations come far too often, and that people are looking for an excuse. So I would argue that really what you find is in all cases of conflict, the nations going to war for their self-interest will find religious justification for it.
Well, Charlie, as I think about this issue of nonviolence versus justification for war, I can't help but feel that nonviolence has in, especially in President Obama's speech, been given a tip of the hat, but nobody's really led a nonviolent effort, which is not pacifism, but it is an active use of the tools of nonviolence to move a political agenda forward. And when we come back from our break, I want to talk with you a little more about the active aspects of nonviolence and of how people can use nonviolence to help move a country forward. So as we go to our first break, I want to remind our listeners that you can learn more about our show at www.ourglobalhope.com. We'll be right back with Charlie Self for more world-changing leadership talk.